Hi, and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. I'm Atik.
And I'm Nyla.
We're both professional registered homeopaths, and between us have over 25 years of professional practice in this field of healing.
The Homeopathy Health Show is the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcasts around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing and healthcare, which is suitable for all ages, young and old.
Every week, we invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy.
Visit www.ukhealthradio.com to listen now. To find out more about us, you can visit us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk. And whilst you are there, do subscribe to our newsletter.
Be inspired.
And join the conversation.
So let's begin today's show here on the UK Health Radio Network, the world's number one talk health radio.
Real feel-good radio.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Show here on the UK Health Radio Network. And I am Atik.
And I'm Nyla. Welcome, everyone.
It's so wonderful to be back, and I do hope you're enjoying the show. So much knowledge, isn't there, out there? It's absolutely just so profound and amazing, isn't it? So many homeopaths, so many different angles and perspectives. Just so love homeopathy. I mean, we live, we breathe homeopathy. Life-changing medicine for the 21st century, indeed. And I'm sure, ladies and gentlemen, you will agree, indeed. Now, hey, there is some good news, which is that we have increased our listenership, you'll be happy to know, to over 70,000 listeners per week. Now, that's not bad, eh? And that's what makes the Homeopathy Health Show the world's number one radio talk show on homeopathy. But enough about the show. Let's talk about our guest today. And that guest is Richard Pitt. And he is an acclaimed homeopath. He's an educator and writer. And his experience does indeed span decades and continents, I have to say. With over 35 years of experience, Richard began his journey in the UK before continuing his work in the US. He led a homeopathic school in San Francisco and taught extensively across the country. His leadership extended into professional bodies such as the Council for Homeopathic Certification and the California Homeopathic Medical Society. Richard also has many, many years of experience across four African countries. As far as homeopathy is concerned, as far as public health initiatives are concerned, and about really bringing that expertise that he has to his vital global context. And I have to say, he is also an author, an absolutely incredible author. Some of the books that he has authored include Clinical Therapeutics of Homeopathic Medicine and the Therapeutic and Thematic Materia Medica. And of course, the all-time great Comparative Materia Medica. So with that, welcome, Richard, from Nyla and I, to the Homeopathy Health Show.
Thank you so much, Atik and Nyla. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to say something here. If you are a homeopath or if you are a homeopathy student and you don't have these two books of Richard, you are missing out. You do need to get the Comparative Materia Medica for your studies. You cannot understand a remedy without having it. And the Therapeutic Guide and Thematic Materia Medica. I'm showing it on the screen. If we share the...
We'll put it out on socials. We'll clip this.
Yeah. Like, all my assignments have been written by going through the remedies in these books. You have to get it. It's no advertisement because you're missing out. You have to get these books.
Hey, I must say here, Richard, as homeopaths, we have no ego because we serve humanity. So myself and Nyla would just want to say, really, you know, thank you for the work that you do, because it's absolutely incredible. And ladies and gentlemen, he is such a wonderful individual himself. He's so calm, he's so relaxed, he's so chilled, and yet powerhouse of homeopathic knowledge. So it's just wonderful to have you on.
Thank you.
So we want to talk about a number of things today, but focusing really on therapeutics, because I know that you have done a lot of work in that. And of course, your books reflect that as well. And as Nyla has just mentioned, you know, for students of homeopathy and for homeopaths themselves, having your books on the desk is only going to increase somebody's way of working, the skill set, enhance the working practice overall as homeopaths. And we're all looking, aren't we? We're always looking and learning, what's the best way to understand a remedy. But hey, Richard, what's interesting nowadays is that I've certainly found that a lot of people may not necessarily want to consult for a chronic condition, but they just want to test the water. So, it's just like putting your feet in or dipping them in water and just testing the water. And they usually try through acutes. They come across and they say, "Oh, look, I've got this problem and I've got that problem." How have you found that? Have you found that stage? Because you've been working very, very extensively in Africa, of course, and a majority of that must be acute as well. Yeah, so just really wanted to ask you on your take on that and how you feel.
Yeah, I think that in terms of African experience, having worked now in, lived in four countries, worked in six countries. I was recently in Eswatini, where I worked with my friend Barbara Braun of the Swaziland Homeopathy Project, and we do clinics in Eswatini. We spent a week in South Africa working in an amazing clinic there near Durban, run by two Swiss doctors. And then often, not this time, I go to Mozambique and we go out into the bush of Mozambique and we treat people under the tree. And in fact, the subtitle of my book on the clinical therapeutics is One Book for Under a Tree. So you turn up in a village and you sit there, and ideally there's a bench, and then the village comes and you have to treat them. And so that has been a sort of an essential part of my experience clinically in the last 15 years since I first lived in Ghana in 2009. And I was there for 1 year and I worked a lot in rural areas there. And then 2 years in Malawi, in again, very rural areas. And then 5 years in Kenya, and then a year in Eswatini. And so the continent is huge, but essentially the kind of practice you do in rural African practice is very much nuts and bolts kind of clinical homeopathy. Having come from the West and having experienced homeopathy in the UK and then a lot in the in California, and being part of the evolution of the new ways of thinking and new ideas in homeopathy and expanding the horizons, it has created an interesting counterpoint between the kind of embracing the new and going beyond the what we could call the traditional way of thinking or the therapeutic or clinical homeopathy into much more a psychological, psychodynamic, metaphorical, and different ways of perceiving. And I'm all good with that. At the same time, aware of that balance that needs to be maintained so that the profession of homeopathy and the system of homeopathic methodology is transparent, replicable, ultimately so-called scientific within an artistic framework. But it has to have some common language and common bounds. And so I've been interested from my own experience in looking at that sort of dialectical dynamic. And as I say, my experience in Africa has made me re-look at how homeopathy can be applied in a very simple, systematic way. And also, my personal mission at this point is to explore how we can teach homeopathy in an African context. Right now, for example, we are doing a 3-year part-time professional program in Ghana. We started a charity in Ghana, and it's originally was working under the Ghana Homeopathy Project, which is a UK-based charity. My friend Linda Shannon was the founder of it. It's under the auspices of Homeopathy in Africa. That's the charity's name. The focus was in Ghana. But 2 years ago, we started a charity in Ghana itself. We said we need to have something on the ground. And from there, we are now embracing a 3-year program. But I'm also looking at how we can teach health professionals homeopathy and to be able to do it in 1 to 2 years, because you can't embrace some of these new methods and then and take that to the context of rural practice in Africa. So we have, and so I've been looking back at how homeopathy used to be practiced. And I've studied in India as well, back in the day in Calcutta, and looking at the ways that the homeopaths in India have always practiced. that kind of clinical application is important. And I think that it has been missing somewhat in modern homeopathic training. We focus so much on the constitutional psychodynamic approaches that sometimes the old clinical knowledge has been forgotten. And back to your point, Atik, about whether it's acute or chronic, when people come to us in an African context, especially in rural practice, often we're doing it for free or for a very small amount. Now, people aren't coming to us because we are homeopaths. They're coming to us because we are actually going to their village and we're offering medical services, and people simply want to get the benefit of whatever medical services they can have, be it homeopathy or elsewhere. It's interesting in an African context, sometimes some of the challenges we had are giving little white tablets. They've been somewhat indoctrinated now into the idea of big pills or injections. And so the subtlety of homeopathy is not so easily understood in some African contexts. But essentially, whether it's acute or chronic or constitutional, you just prescribe on what is in front of you. And sometimes you only have 10 or 15 minutes to take a case. You have to work within that framework. Can you do that with some degree of success and some degree of consistency? And that's been some of the questions that I have been sort of looking at when I've been faced with these challenges of practice in Africa.
I have to say, before Nyla jumps in, I know she's there, wants to ask something on this, but it's quite interesting because when I went to visit my uncle several times, he used to practice in Nairobi. He was a homeopath, and I remember the first time that I went, and it's like patient after patient. The bell is ringing, the phone is ringing, people are waiting in the lounge. That was his clinic. By day that was a clinic. In the evening it was just a family place to sit, right? But it was like he said to me, "Well, there you go," and it's like, "There you go, what?" And it was like, "Go on, go forward, and talk to the patients and do the prescription." But when you're on your feet and you're literally thrown into the deep end, after about 10 to 15 patients or 20 even, your mind starts to work differently, right? Because all of the things that you've mentioned, the constitution, is it, can I get to a single remedy? Is it purely an acute? Is it, what way am I going to do it? It starts to process, doesn't it? And you work very differently because it's all observation and it's very quick thinking. But it actually does help. It's an incredibly powerful way to do it.
I was recently, as I say, in this clinic called Kula in near Durban on the east coast of South Africa. And they bus in hundreds of people a day in these combis, in these vans from all the surrounding area within a 2 hour radius. And you have to do it. And because you have to find a remedy that moment, you don't have the privilege or luxury to go off and do an extensive repertorization. Yes, sometimes I call it educated guessing. It is. You sometimes don't have everything, but it's remarkable, as you say, it changes your way of thinking that you are forced to be very economical and very precise in what you are choosing to go for. And when I've been teaching that to students and practitioners there, I said, within 5 minutes, you need to make a determination of whether this is an acute case or whether it's based on etiology or whether you do need to go into some chronic detail or constitutional. You have to make a decision quite quickly because you don't have the time otherwise. So, and once you've made that determination, and obviously if you have to take the full case, you do that every time if you can. But sometimes you see what's in front of you, and often you have a lot of very complicated, yet not complicated, meaning you get middle-aged people, male or female, maybe they're overweight, they have diabetes and/or hypertension, but they may be on drugs, but they are virtually asymptomatic. What do you do in that situation? So then you have to have at your fingertips a number of possible remedies that you know could cover that. And it could be something as simple as giving tissue salts, for example, or looking at interesting remedies which are important for diabetes, like uranium nitricum, or on and on and on, because you don't have that much to go on. And often in Africa, particularly, people tend to be, especially maybe more in rural areas, more private. Then they don't expect you to ask that many questions about their personal lives. And I've been in India, whereas the people are quite the opposite in some ways. People are very happy to them, are more open. In Africa, there tends to be a bit more reserve in that way. And so you have to adapt to that situation as well. So every circumstance brings certain challenges. And hence, that's why I came up with the clinical therapeutics book, which is the one book for under a tree. It's back to the basics. So if someone comes in with chronic rheumatoid arthritis, I'm not saying I have all the remedies in it, but I'm putting the main ones that we see in a clinical context. So all of, and so there are, as you said at the beginning, so many approaches, so many different ways. And I've often been mystified how many books can there be on homeopathy, but we seem to always be able to produce more. Then yet more prisms, more ways of perceiving. So I is that it is fascinating.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
It definitely is so fascinating how you're talking, because as in West, as you yourself know, we sit with the patient, talk about it, find their constitutional, what happened, how it happened, how is it manifesting. I really want to go a step back for our listeners who have been fascinated by now of the amount of work you do, what you do, the clinical therapeutics, 15 minutes or 5 minutes to come to a good remedy because you really want to show results. But what was the turning point for you from here to Africa, from UK, America to Africa? What was this this calling behind it? Why did you do it? How did you do it?
Yeah, a confession. My grandfather had TB, you know. So and when I was 18 and I left England after my A levels, I basically thought I'd take a year off and come back and go to uni. And I didn't come back for 4 years. And I ended up in India for 2 years. And then I got into kind of Indian spirituality and philosophy. And then when I came back to England, I thought, you know, what do I do with my life? I have no idea. And by chance, I came across an advert for the College of Homeopathy. I read one book called The Patient, Not the Cure by Marjorie Blackie. The next thing I know, within 3 months of being back in England, I was sitting in a homeopathy class. And I mean, very fortuitous. So fast forward, after being in Britain for 8 more years practicing and learning homeopathy, I spent 20 years in the States. But then I knew I was done. I was finished with that life. And I then needed to travel again. And after being in India for 6 months, I then was at a conference in Holland with a colleague of mine. It's called Homeopathy in Developing Countries by Harry van der Zee, who's a well-known Dutch homeopath, former editor of Lynx, and does extensive work now with the PC remedies in Africa and elsewhere. And I met my friend Linda, and she just happened to say, do you fancy going to Africa, to Ghana, to work there? Because we need someone there. And Africa was the big unknown for me. And I've always loved African music, for example. So I wanted to experience another situation. So, and that led me to Ghana, which led me to Malawi, which led me to Kenya. And then one thing led from one to the other. And so it just happens to have been my personal karma to kind of embrace that approach. And it fulfills a lot of things for me, both in terms of my personal likes for travel within different cultures. And then over the years, I've just grown to love it there even more. So, but my, intellectually, I've always been fascinated by the idea of integration. And that's just to mention that why, as you say, the book that I wrote called Comparative Materia Medica, why did I write that? And that was because it said integrating neural remedies, because I wanted to look at this interesting movement and exploration within homeopathy as new remedies came up, how to integrate it within that existing body of knowledge. So don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. There's a temptation to give the most obscure rare remedy just for the hell of it. But does it make sense? So, and it has to tie into the existing body of knowledge. There has to be a continuum in the evolution of thinking. It doesn't come out of nowhere. So then I tried to look at what 36 chapters, each chapter representing one remedy, but being a comparative device. So Apis is the chapter we look at all the insects, tarantula, all the spiders, tuberculinum, all the tubercular remedies, phosphorus, all the bird remedies. And so I was trying to create a new map so we can show the progression of thinking within homeopathic thought and not leave anything out, not, and at the same time, not get stuck in the old, just the old methods. Some people say, I never give any remedy that Hahnemann didn't prove himself, or I never give any remedy that hadn't been proven until the time of Kent. Nothing else would I give. So to me, that's one rigidity. And the other one is always trying to find the most obscure remedy possible just for the heck of it. So how to find the balance? And as a teacher, how to communicate this knowledge so that it makes sense. So I think the comparative methodology, which was a tried and true methodology in the 19th century, needed to be refined and developed further and nuanced. So when you're looking at the differences between even, Calcarea phosphorica and Calcarea carbonica or Calcarea silicata, how can we do that systematically? And so some of the new thinking I've very much embraced, but I think it had to be put into the context of the whole system. So that was the inspiration behind that, which took 5 years to write, by the way. I mean, it was a huge process,
An
and
extensive book and is recommended by teachers, actually, our legendary teachers. And I have to thank the tubercular miasm here that has given us legends like yourself.
it's everyone's done their bit. I mean, we've all been around the block now. I mean, it's over 40 years. It's 44 years now when I was sitting, which is
Amazing.
mad, that I was sitting in a homeopathy class. And I think about all these people that have contributed to it. And as I said in my introduction to the Comparative Materia Medica, homeopathy is like a massive rock, and we're all chipping away and doing a little bit to create the form that is the knowledge base of homeopathy. And everyone's doing their bit, no one can do that much on their own, but collectively it's a phenomenal task. And so, I mean, the credit to all the people like Frederick Schroyens of synthesis, the work that's gone into the repertory programs, or Roger Van Zandvoort. And I mean, this is a phenomenal body of research and work that many, many, many people have done. So,
Love
it's
the word collective. I just because it is a collective. It no individual thing. There is no ego, nothing about individualism. We are a collective body here because all we want is to serve humanity in the best way possible.
it's a yeah.
One thing about America, which I kind of was 20 years there, and even though I'm English, but I really felt part of that community there. And there's a reason why I'm saying this. And in a way, though I left it 15 years ago, I'm still very much connected to that community. And I have patients still in California, that where I used to work and live. And I feel very, you know, appreciative of that tradition and what homeopathy has done in America. And from the early times when Haring and Lippi were there in Philadelphia, I mean, these are my heroes, man. The life of Haring, there's a great book on the life of Haring I recommend. Absolutely extraordinary, you know. And similar to Hahnemann, when he was young in Germany, basically living on bread and water and surviving from the generosity of his landlady. I mean, these are the people that committed their lives in that way, which is phenomenal. And then in DC, in Washington, DC, there is a statue of Hahnemann that was inaugurated by President William McKinley, one of the great American presidents, by the way, before he was assassinated. But this is an extraordinary statue there of Hahnemann, and it's the only one to a doctor, as far as I know, in Washington, D.C., the only one to a non-military person, virtually, I think, and a non-citizen. I mean, and there it is in Washington, D.C., an extraordinary statue to Hahnemann. And in the year 2000, we had a re-inauguration of that statue, and everyone came from all over the world, from India, and Vithoukas was there from Greece, and we had a great conference there and bringing together the homeopathic family. And what's relevant for me right now, and the timing of this is perfect, is that today is the day that we are relaunching a journal called the California Homeopath.
Wow. Yes, that's right. I got a message on that this morning.
Yeah, it's just out. Now, the California Homeopath, which you can find at californiahomeopath.com, was a journal formed by Dr. William Boracke and William Dewey in 1882 in California. And it was the Journal of the California Homeopathic Medical Society that was formed around the same time. That journal existed for 10 years between 1882 and 1892. And then it became the Pacific Coast Journal of Homeopathy as they were embracing the whole West Coast. The state of Washington was only established in 1896, I think. Before that, it was part of Oregon. So they wanted a broader journal. So, and then it stayed there till 1954. A lot of those journals are in the reference library of the San Francisco Hospital. And medical school. And so in 2006, myself and three colleagues, we reinaugurated the California Homeopath. And I was editor of that for 10 years until 2016. And by that time, I was living in Kenya and I was a long way away. And the journal basically fell apart at that point. Ideally, it was going to be reinvigorated, but it didn't happen until now. And about a year and a half ago, I was back in California, back in my old haunt and meeting old friends. And we decided to relaunch it. And we're doing it actually on this day today.
I actually received a message from Vijay Ravnev in California. And he sent me this message when I woke up. I saw it. the California Homeopath is back. And I know that you are covering 1882 to 1892 as well, with some of the lost issues. And for anybody interested in that, please do visit California, www.californiahomeopath.com, because this is a very, very nice revival indeed.
Yeah, and we're going to do our new issue in January. And thematically, we are hoping to do it on the role of technology and AI and its implications for homeopathy, if not the world. So it's going to be a broad approach to understanding how the use or abuse of technology and what that impact might have for homeopathy. So that's our focus.
It's interesting you mentioned this, Nyla and I. We talk a lot about the history of homeopathy as far as the greats, you know, and you mentioned Lippe and you mentioned Haring, and we can talk about Boracke as well. And, you know, some of them were best buddies, right? But it's interesting because we're sitting here and we live our life as we're supposed to and we do whatnot, and there's so many other things involved. But these greats, they actually, and James Tyler Krent, of course, they actually lived and breathed homeopathy 24/7, as in literally. I mean, wow, talk about a powerhouse of minds, right?
Yeah.
And imagine them talking and sitting around a table and talking about remedies and maybe having a little argument as well and getting upset about something, and but then coming out with something so profound and laughing over it, and or maybe just, you know, having that discussion and saying, hey, look, this, and it's just something else, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, it is something else. I'll show you here. I've got these two images here. I had these in my office in California. We had many more, but these are the last ones. It's Samuel Hahnemann here. Oh, wow. And we had all the greats there. And unfortunately, I couldn't bring them. And here's Constantine Herring.
Mm.
So these are right here. Yeah. I mean, Hahnemann looks like that's when he looks like a German fisherman, actually, here. So. Yeah, it's actually true. I mean, that legacy is so important. So,
Kiko, this is such a brilliant news about the relaunch of the journal. And please do go to the californiahomeopaths.com and visit the journal. January, you are saying that it's going to be...
God willing.
Yes.
Yeah, January, February.
And then interesting topic, technology and homeopathy. The AI is all over. I am seeing so many homeopaths on Facebook using AI to answer the questions of the patients. And I don't know where it's going to end.
No one does. This is the interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's a sheer speed, isn't it, Nyla? The sheer speed of AI, right? I mean, that's actually more than the remedy selection itself. And we you know, we're not talking about that at this moment because that's a whole new box, isn't it?
Whole new topic.
It's just the speed, isn't it? It's like so fast, right? But anyway, I digress. Over to you.
We do need to do a podcast on this topic, actually, because it is emerging and what are the limits of AI and when not to prescribe. But I had a question. When you were in Africa and your first few years, and you were trying to learn the way of prescribing, the quick prescribing, what were your go-to books, or how did you learn the way of quick prescribing, the seeing the key elements, the key observational skills, and how did you build that up?
I think just the knowledge that I'd probably accumulated, you know, just in studying homeopathy. But I could just give you a quick example. You know, you'd see many people come in with symptoms looking like osteoarthritis, and routinely every case would be Rustox, you know, or Leadum, you know, based just on what was presenting. But there were times when you could see the chronic remedy. I remember one case where this woman came in and her problems were more in the back, and she had this kind of fierce look on her face, and the back pain, you know, extended down the thighs. And there may be one other slight modality, and I went, oh, this is K-like carb, you know, because you have that back pain as if the back would break, with the back pain extending down the thigh. And I just looked at her face and looked at that sort of domineering quality, and I went, this is K-like carb, you know, this is it. And so there were these kind of ways, those classic kind of observational characteristics that sometimes you see in patients. And I'd always encourage, I'd do it myself and encourage my students to have at the top of the page observations. Just write down the first words that come to your mind in terms of how you observe the patient. Sometimes, by no means always, you can see the remedy from the person's, you know, perception, from how their body type is. And I write about that in Comparative Materia Medica on constitutions typology, and using the work of Leon Vanier and Mukherjee, talking about the constitutional typology of the hand types and the body types. Sometimes that observational characteristic can be useful. So that would be an example where I would like say, well, do I routinely just give like an acute remedy? Because the thing is, this osteoarthritis is kind of wear and tear. They've been working in the fields, in the cassava fields, for a long time, many years. You have this, what we call situational materia medica, to look at. What is their circumstance? What is their environment they're working in? And that can help you, just look at where to go with the remedy. If you don't have anything else to go on, you may just have to give it on the keynote symptoms that's presenting, just what's there. Because they're not going to tell you anything else really, normally. Or you don't have time. And if you have time, by all means, but you have to, yeah. So observation is one, understanding it's acute or chronic, looking at the main remedies based on what we could call the situation, because people's lifestyles are not that different. They live very similar kind of lives. So of course you individualize. But we're also collectivizing, meaning we're all part of the collective. So that's also another way to look at the dynamic between the individual story and your collective or your social environment. And it's only a predominant aspect of Western civilization, if you want, starting rough from the Greeks or even Greeks up until now, where the idea of your own individual identity separate from your society is taken for granted.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're an individual first is embedded in the American Constitution. You're an individual first. Whereas in fact, in all cultures, including Western cultures, we live within the collective identity of your society, your nation, and all of that. But in the West, we have this other way of thinking. And so it's all fine, but it's produced much more of an individualized approach. Whereas when you look at situations in Africa, that individual is experienced their own lives in the context of their environment and their situation. So you tend to have to think within that and look at the situational dynamic. So that's just one way. I mean, there's many, many other cases in which, I mean, even acute cases. I mean, in Ghana, I remember just having amazing cases. I don't know why it was at that point where people came in the middle of the night in agony on the back of a motorbike, you getting up a bed and they're in agony on the floor and you carry them into the bed and you observe and you prescribe. And if the remedy works, it works in 5 minutes. And then I remember one case, I had to give three remedies. And in the end, I gave kefir. I gave it on two rubrics, restlessness with pain and weeping with pain. I said, well, I've given Nux Vomica, I've given Bryonia, I have to give kefir. And it just worked just like that, And you saw the person just fall asleep in 5 minutes, and you're there virtually in the bush, with no electricity, trying to find a remedy. So
it's... Yeah. It's interesting, what you're talking about, because I was just thinking about this and I thought, I have to be wise with my words here, but the miracles of homeopathy come to life actually when we talk about it in these terms, in acute situations, in emergency situations. That's where you see the true power of homeopathy, because it's instant, right? It really is. Yeah. And that doesn't necessarily mean seconds, but you see the results, you see the healing take place. Yeah. It's just fascinating, isn't it? I just love that side of homeopathy, because it's not because it's fast, but it gets you to think on your feet. And the results are, I mean, the power of homeopathy. I mean, You can take the physical dose, right? You can be medical homeopathy, clinical homeopathy, right? You've got that element. And then you've got somebody who's really suffered in their life, and you can go across that scale, can't you? And go into the depth of it as well. And it's just so all encompassing. There is no other system on this planet which can cover so much at any one time, right? It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are other systems. I think some aspects of traditional Chinese medicine are extraordinary as well. But it's true that our embracing of nature and looking at the consciousness of nature and that everything in nature is unique. Everything has its own consciousness. It has its own purpose. And what we're exploring, and this is a big topic which ties into technology as well, but we're talking about our relationship as human beings with nature in every sense of the word, specifically medically, but not only from a medical point of view, medicinal qualities of nature, but also the consciousness of nature itself. Why this rock has its own energy, its own consciousness. And where I was in Eswatini, you know, they have a massive amount of iron ore in the mountains there. It attracts huge amounts of lightning in the summer. Mm. And they have one of the oldest mines in the world there that's been actively mined of this type of iron ore for 50,000 years. It's been an active mine, a continuous history. And this is about the relationship of humans to nature. And nature to humans. And so essentially that's why it's so complex for us, because it's the diversity of nature is being embraced in our study. You know, whether you're taking the vine of an ayahuasca plant in the Amazonia or the neem tree in India or an iron ore in Eswatini, this is part of the fabric of consciousness itself, human and nature consciousness. And now we have technology which is interweaving itself in that relationship and creating a level of separation between us and nature, which is all technology does that. All forms of technology create what I call an extension of separation, which creates another level of challenge for human evolution. How do we adapt to that technical challenge, that technical input? Will it be used productively or will it be used negatively? And then often it's both, but this is where we're at now. And so technos or tools are used by humans in our interaction with nature itself. So I just think it's just, you know, a fascinating kind of way of looking at it and looking at nature consciousness. And that's what we're doing. And just to give you, just to let you know where I'm at right now with things, just this book I wrote, the Therapeutic Guide in Thematic Materia Medica, I've separated now into the Clinical Therapeutics book, which is taking half of that book, and the other half called a Thematic Materia Medica. What I'm doing now is going back over the essential texts, and this back to your question, Atik, about what books do I use. I mean, I was brought up with Fatak and Bojra. Mm-hmm. So those two books have been my go-to clinical materia medicas. I love Nash's Leaders, but more to read. But for a direct access, I'm a Fatak man all the way. But these books need to be somewhat restructured and put into and incorporating a bit more of the modern information. And I want to extract the essence of that remedy so that if you are looking at that remedy, you see certain themes structured accordingly, knowing that ideally you need to have one or more of these themes of a remedy in order to give the remedy. Because I saw with African students, even Fatak, it's a complex book. There's a lot of detail. And Boraki, which is also amazing, but maybe not quite as trustworthy if you want clinically as Fatak, but nonetheless, an amazing book, but the information just needs to be made more accessible. So I'm actually creating a four part of this book. And the first part's written already, is the main remedies, 150 remedies. Part two will be so-called lesser known remedies. Mm. Part three will be nozodes and sarcodes. And then part four will be new provings and new remedies. And so I'm hoping to put that together in a book in the next 6 to 12 months. And I'm going through all the old texts that I think are important, especially Fatak, Bojra, Boraki, and Lippi, and these books, just to make sure that the essential material is there, and including some newer material or putting in some of the botanical classifications so that we can map it effectively and look at similar remedies.
Hey, we'll
So,
write, me and Nyla write from Homeopathy in Practice. We'll write a nice quote for that book, okay? One of them.
okay, right.
Well, for one of them, okay? You choose which volume.
Cannot wait for that book,
Yeah,
actually. That is
brilliant.
really, really needed. I'm a big fan of Hattak and Boscher as well. Like, if there is a pathology there, a patient has a pathology, and the remedy is in that rubric, it has to work. Yeah, that definitely. I really loved when you said extension of separation, and I was thinking about you mentioning all the trees from various continents, and I was thinking there is a dire need of the remedies like blue rays, blue screen, the Wi-Fi, the electricity, because we are disconnecting, we are separating ourselves from where we were born and immersing ourselves in this new technology, and how diverse homeopathy is, that it can help you, can take the load off your body and brings you back to the balance where you can actually work with that tree, go back to where you belong. So thankful for, I just love the conversation with you today. Before, because we are really out of time, but I do wanted to touch upon the master's course that you are going to do, if anyone is interested, if you want to talk about it for our audience.
In October, actually, I'm part of a yoga center in the south of Spain called Surya Leela, the Dance of the Sun, Surya Leela. And I've been involved for 15 years. It's a stunning yoga retreat center in south of Spain. And I work there. I'm actually one of the original founders. And I decided, let me, and actually, I was inspired by a friend of mine, Helen Johnson, in England, to do an advanced course there. So, from the 18th to the 25th of October, we're doing a gathering. There's only about 11, 12, 13 of us on the study of Materia Medica and clinical homeopathy. It's just a time to come together and share the knowledge and just have a week together, and including some trituration proving, walks in the mountains, and exploring the local culture, and then just having that time to just go more deeply into our study.
Oh,
Sounds
I'd
amazing.
love to do something.
Just need my kids
Bliss.
to grow up a little more so that I can actually go out for a week. I would have loved to. A friend of mine is coming, and I would have loved to join her.
Next time,
Next
we'll
time,
talk
for
about it,
sure.
because I'm going to do one in February as well. It's going to be called Health and Homeopathy, and that's more looking at my homeopathic books for travel and home, because of all my experience in, having even had malaria, I've done that. I'm going to do more an introduction of how practical homeopathy can be in the home for family and friends, and if you're on the road, how to prepare, what things to get used to, what to know about, what kind of diseases do you need to understand if you're going to the tropics, for example. So that's another course in February.
Richard, we are at the end of this episode, but we should do one definitely on travel remedies, on therapeutics. So we will have you back very, very soon indeed to carry on this delightful conversation. And hey, it's been an absolute honor to have you on for certainly for this episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Thank you for sharing, for caring. Sharing that knowledge and that wisdom. And we actually look forward to seeing you physically face to face when you're back in the UK. I know we met
Fantastic.
earlier this year, Nyla and I, we met you at the School of Homeopathy, and it was a brief moment in time, of course, but nevertheless, cherished memories, I have to say.
Thank you.
So
Loved
just
your
so much.
brewing of cassava. Loved
Ah,
it. Loved
great, thank you.
it. Yes, and thank you for joining us. It was a really buzzing conversation. We could see the energy there. We could see the love of homeopathy, and we cannot thank you enough. We cannot thank our homeopaths enough for what they do. We are here because we have the same purpose. We want to help, and no one can stop us. Thank you,
Great.
Richard.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care, and we'll talk to you very, very soon
All
indeed.
right, brilliant. Thank you. Bye.
I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Tune in every week for inspiring conversations, bringing you all things health and well-being to your radio and podcast apps.
The more exposure the Homeopathy Health Show receives, the better for homeopathy around the world.
And please do support the show by clicking follow on our socials.
You can find us at www.homeopathyinpractice.co.uk and on Facebook and Instagram at Homeopathy in Practice. Do give us a follow and there. Let's promote the voice of homeopathy around the world together. Until next time, stay safe and take care.